What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either. Really. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Hello. Happy Monday.
Here we are. And today we are talking about, well, I think part of what sparked this episode in my mind is what I've been noticing in you as you're preparing for this new person to join your family, this whole new human, is just how focused on and intentional you seem to be in thinking of Charlie's experience of this, and how intentional you are about being mindful of that transition for him, doing what you can to make it a good transition for him. And so I wanted to start with a question. I'm feeling curious about how it is that this became so important to you.
I think the root of this for me is my deep belief in Charlie's full personhood and autonomy and who he is in our family. And we have created a really tight trio of us. And so really wanting to acknowledge what a shift this is going to be for him and his life. I grew up around really, really big families and people just having babies all the time, which I have all kinds of varied and sundry feelings about. But one thing I didn't see a lot of was it feeling like a community decision to bring another person in. And we've talked about this in terms of me feeling like I didn't like ask Andrew's parents permission to have a baby, but like that they were part of the conversation because they are an integral part of our care team, our support team. I consider them co-parents as we are raising Charlie because they have such a role in his life. And I'm bringing an entire person into our family, which is going to disrupt in beautiful and probably hard, both beautiful and hard ways, the dynamic that we've built. And it's going to shift our relationship to Charlie, Charlie's relationship to us within this new person. And so it's not like we asked Charlie's permission to get pregnant. But I think really honoring and talking to him so much about what is going to happen and giving him as much autonomy in this as possible feels so, so important to me in honoring both his full personhood and this baby that's coming. New baby will have never known anything different than life with Charlie, but Charlie's life will be forever altered. And he's old enough too that he will always have a before and after. There will be before baby and after baby. And that feels really distinct too. I think, not that I wouldn't be intentional about it if he was like 2 years old and we were having a baby, but it would feel really different.
What I'm hearing you say is that is twofold. It's one, recognizing that this decision affects a lot of people profoundly. And that is something we've talked about on this podcast a lot, is recognizing this as more of like a communal project. We don't always imagine it that way, but recognizing that this will profoundly impact him. And then coupled in or tucked into that is the recognition of Charlie as a whole human with his own entire world of experience inside of him. I'm curious also, and say as much or as little as you want about this, but I'm curious also about your own experience with siblings.
What a fraught and beautiful thing.
I know. I mean, I'm like, do I want anyone to ask me these questions? No. But but like, do you think that that is playing any part in how you're thinking about this?
So much. I think in the beginning, too, some of the grief, because we came in and out of being like, we aren't having more kids. And the thing that I grieved in not having another kid was that Charlie wouldn't have a sibling. And also, I cannot dictate their relationship or know what it will be. My mom has a sibling and they've been estranged nearly my entire life. And so just because I'm giving, in quotation marks, Charlie a sibling does not mean that that will be a nurturing, positive relationship for the rest of his life. And also, I really hope it is. It's something that's going to outlive me. And so me doing everything in my power to offer them the tools to move the relationship in a positive way, feels really important. Like I have some control over that, which is just like how I treat the both of them as individuals, as units, and prepare them and tend to them. In my family, I am the third, and I'm a rainbow baby on the heels of two losses. So the sibling right above me was 5 or 6 when I was born. So she had been the baby for 5 years. The only thing she knew was my oldest sister and then her. I mean, I cannot imagine what it would be like to be really desiring another child and to have multiple losses. Like, I can't even fathom like what that was for my mom. But it definitely impacted the dynamic of our relationship. And I think a lot about this with Charlie in so many ways. He's been a really easy child. Like when I talk to some other people, I'm just like, oh, this has been pretty straightforward and simple. And so I think a lot about like, what if new baby is big air quotes, difficult. And making sure I was the easy one, my sibling above me was difficult. And that created a very distinct dynamic between us just in the stories that we were told about ourselves. And so I think a lot about, I'm having like 5 thoughts at once. Charlie is, has been becoming less and less easy, just like big feelings and growth spurts and all of the things. And so a thing that I want to be really cautious of is that babies are like kind of perfect, even if they're tricky. Like even if baby's crying a lot, the baby is like perfect and everyone's doting on it and no one's telling the baby no. And to be really conscious of the way that I'm engaging with another big quotation, like negative actions or things from Charlie, and how that is going to compare to how everyone's just doting on the baby and the baby is perfect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those are the things swimming around in my head, particularly around sibling dynamics and how I want them to feel. Something that I'm really trying to instill into Charlie, and I think I'm doing a good job of, is like the word that came to mind was responsibility. And I don't mean that he is responsible for the baby in any way, but this like ownership, this collective communal, like when we talk about the baby, he always says our baby, and which is something that I think that I've modeled for him. And just talking so much about like that this is another person that we get to bring into our house, that we get to welcome as part of our collective, feels really important to me. I want to set a foundation for them to have a good relationship as much as I can have any sway or pull in that. And I want Charlie to just feel like honored and seen and not displaced, while also instilling a deep sense of like communal care and like knowing that we're all going to be shifting to care for this new person.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking, one of the things I'm thinking about is my own relationships with my siblings. And I have 5 older siblings, so like a pretty big test case of like potential recipes for all those different relationships. And I would say I have very different relationships with my different siblings. And there's a huge range of closeness and a lack of closeness and just different dynamics and roles that we play in each other's stories. And it does make me kind of reflect on and curious about what role a parent has in that. I mean, in some ways, I'm like, okay, I had the same parents for all of these relationships and the outcomes of very different relationships with most of them. And also, I do find myself thinking like, yeah, I think if my there maybe were things that my parents could have done that maybe would have shifted some of this. I don't know. And, you know, and it's forever the like the impossible puzzle. You'll never know for sure. But like when you're thinking about your own family of origin and then this your family with Charlie and Andrew and this new baby, what do you think are the things that parents can do or not do that make a difference?
I feel like I'm talking out of my ass. You know, I feel like this is the like, you're the perfect parent until you have kids.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to be the perfect parent of siblings until we have the sibling here.
But maybe we can both reflect on our experiences of being siblings, right? Like, what are the things that helped or didn't help, or what could have been different, or what was good? Like,
I have one thought.
Okay.
I was a rainbow baby. When I was, for my first whole year of life, every month my mom threw a birthday party for me.
Oh my gosh.
So I had 12 birthday parties in my first.
Hold on, pause. When you say rainbow baby, I'm like guessing that means miracle baby because of rainbows. But like, is that a phrase? Is that a
Yeah, it's a thing. It's like the baby you have after a loss.
Oh, I'd never heard that before. Were you raised being called the rainbow baby?
I feel like that term has come into vogue later. I don't know that that was a term back then, but my entire childhood identity, like I came to solve and heal grief and I was perfect. And that is the narrative that I was given. And so there was a lot of pressure to be perfect. And also I was an easy baby. Like I wanted to go to bed. I've always been an early to bed, early to rise. My mom said I used to just like reach for my crib. There are things that have been difficult about me. But in terms of like, you know, in raising kids, like I was not a difficult child. And the sibling before me and after me had very different experiences. I conformed well. I worked hard to belong by conforming.
Is compliant a word that you would use? Compliant?
Yes. Yeah. And I think something that I am really conscious of is, I don't know how this is going to play out when like one kid is being easy and the other one is being hard. And I know that that will happen, but I just want to be so conscious of the stories that I form. Not even that I'm like telling them that, but that I form in my head about who they are, because that is inevitably going to trickle out into the way that I engage with them.
Totally. Yes. And it's making me think so much about, there's like the story that a parent can have in their head, unspoken even, but just a story that they carry, and that can affect a sibling relationship. But it sounds like it also affected you. You had this narrative of who you were and what your role was. And it's making me think about like the stories we have in our head and how those stories can impact. I think like, when Otto was really little, I was really mindful of this narrative that I was creating that I had in my head. And I never said it out loud, but this narrative I had in my head of that, like, Otto loved Micah more than me, and how I would act out that story. Or I was reacting to that story. I would interact with Otto where I was very obvious that that story was in me. And I guess it's just making me think, I know this is much broader than talking about siblings, but it's making me think about the stories that we hold and being aware of them, even when we don't say them out loud. And it's also making me think about how it's really easy for us to blur our narratives, and that the thing that I'm experiencing as a parent, maybe the loss of two pregnancies and then this rainbow baby, the thing I'm experiencing as a parent becomes like who you are, child, or, you know, like, or that I lump my story into your story, and it's how easy it is for those to blur.
And this feels like what you talk about is like, there's no way to know. Like, did I get like extra tender nurturance and care? And did that make me so like docile and easy? Was I always going to be that way? Was I like so like careful to perform in order to belong?
But I think a birthday every month,
that's pretty intense.
It's sending a signal.
It's a message.
There's some message there. There's some story there. There's some...
No one else has ever had a birthday a month in my whole family.
See, wow. Yeah, just it's tricky. It's tricky, these stories that we have and how our kids and the lines between us and our kids can get so muddled. Because I can only imagine what that was like for your mom. And, you know, like, I imagine that was enormous. And of course, this beautiful, perfect Caitlin miracle arrives.
I mean, who wouldn't love me the most?
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. yeah, I'm trying to think of, for me, in terms of sibling relationship, I think it's interesting because I think part of this is like personalities that are just always going to be a natural, easier fit than others. I think some of it is like external circumstances that you can't necessarily control, about like age gap and like things that happen at school or things, you know, things that happen totally outside of your home. But I do think that there are probably things that would have been helpful in my sibling relationships that have more strain, that really just has to do with like conflict and conflict skills and like being a guide for how to have conflict and remain in a relationship of some kind. I think as we've all become adults and maybe not having great conflict skills has meant that those relationships have been harder to maintain. So I guess maybe part of it is just like, as a parent, like what you can control is trying to model and teach skills about how to listen to or stay connected to people who maybe are really different than you or see things differently.
Well, the conflict piece, I hope I can teach them good conflict resolution, because yeah, that was not something that was modeled for me at all. And one thing, I think making space for difference, and that you don't have to conform to belong, that you could have different beliefs, that there's not one right way. I think that has created a lot of, can create a lot of conflict. And you like don't know until you look back. But looking back, I have been the caregiver of my older siblings and their children in my entire adult life, like my later teens and adult life. And I think something about this, like, I don't know why I have it, but this deep responsibility to take care of them, to end suffering, which is what I was brought here to do. I think I would have really different relationships with them if I hadn't been in these roles where I felt responsible. And as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about like how self-important, how self-absorbed of me to think that I am the only one who can sweep in and rescue, that I would know best, that I am the, and to place myself in that position and then to have people so reliant on me because I've decided that I'm the one who could solve it.
And so, and you know what's interesting also, Caitlin, as you're talking about this, there is this interesting way in which we create these little ecosystems and everyone's playing a role. And it very much could be that the way that the ecosystem has been built, you were the only one who was going to swoop in, and you're right. And also, what is it like to disrupt the ecosystem? And is that a good thing? Painful?
It is a scary, painful, and so releasing.
So it's bringing me back to this idea of the stories we put upon our kids and sometimes like the roles we assign our children. And so maybe this is another reason why we should be really mindful of not assigning roles, of like allowing our kids to play and inviting them to play different roles within the family, so that we don't get stuck. And for the benefit of everyone, developing different skills, trying on different hats, and getting to kind of bolster a broader tool set.
This too feels like an opportunity where I talk a lot about loving every iteration of someone, or like pausing to see who they are now. And I think about that a lot because in so many, I have wished that for myself, that people could like release the past idea they had of me and to see me as I am right now, that they're just seeing me through the lens of like what they knew. And I think that is a gift we could give our kids and our kids in their sibling relationship is to teach them to see each, because like, oh my God, you live with someone for so long and you like remember certain things and the patterns build up. And I think if we don't build in intentional time to like pause and notice what is new and different and to like be aware of like what's right in front of us instead of the stories that we're telling ourselves from things that happened in the past. I want this to be a daily way of living. I really want to just constantly be seeing Charlie anew. I see you as you are right now. I see you as you are right now. And every morning it is different. And I am here and I see you. And that is just a practice I'm trying to build in for him. It's something I'm working on so hard with Andrew, because dear God, once you're with someone for 12 years, it's hard to see them in the present moment. But also, how could we build in like specific, like hard stops around like, I don't know, birthdays or New Year's or something where we all like take a deep breath and wipe the slate clean and say like, what do I see in you like right now that is present that maybe wasn't before? I wonder if there's something in there that could be really beautiful. That's just like a good practice for anyone in the world. But I think for siblings to be able to do that, I know with my little sister, we have worked really hard to have a good relationship now. We did not have that great of a relationship as kids or through our teens or even into our early 20s. And I think a lot of it is like seeing each other as we are right now instead of all of the past stuff and having to release the stories that we were told about each other as children.
Yeah, I think that we get really comfortable in what the narrative is and who the characters are within a family.
Because it's known, it's expected.
Yes, there's a comfort in that. Even if it's not like great, you know, like there is comfort in coming into the room and knowing who's going to play what part and what the story of our family is. And I think it can be scary to be curious. It can be scary for things to change. But I think that the curiosity about your family might be one of those things that allows for long arcs of staying connected. So I think there's something about what you're saying about anew and seeing a person anew and remaining endlessly curious about what is instead of like continuing to lay something on top of a family that doesn't exist anymore or never did, maybe, you know, maybe never did.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, so thinking practically, bring our listeners in on some of the ways that you're being intentional. What resources are you using? What new scripts are you using for this transition for your family and for Charlie with the new baby?
I'm so glad you asked. I have three books that have been so helpful for us. So the first one is called 9 Months Before a Baby. And it's just this beautifully illustrated book that ties the like duration of the pregnancy to the seasons. So it feels really easy for Charlie to conceptualize time passing. And so on each page, like the left-hand page will show an illustration of what the like embryo, fetus, baby look like. And then on the right-hand side, there's an illustration of like an example of what the family might be doing to prepare. The words are so minimal. It's like this little like poem about a baby growing. But we have used it. We used it to prep to talk about, he went to an ultrasound with us and there's like a scene of an ultrasound. And there's a scene where grandparents come and this moment where the parents are leaving and then the soon-to-be big sibling is like waving but looking a little apprehensive. And so on that page, we talk a lot about what it will feel like when we go to the hospital and the different scenarios in which it could play out and who his caregivers will be. And I feel like we come in and out of reading this book. I got it right when I was pregnant. So we like used it in the beginning and we've come back to it. And the one we're talking about a lot now is how he wants to meet the baby. And the picture shows like the big sibling coming into the hospital. And I showed him and I told him that he could meet the baby at the hospital or at home. And he immediately was like, home. Hospital is overwhelming. There'll be so many strangers. There'll be people I don't know. He's like, I only want to meet the baby in the house. And I was like, great. Heard. Love that you know that. And then we talked about, because he knows he stayed in the hospital for a while. And I was like, sometimes babies have to stay in the hospital for a little bit. And if that happens and you want to meet the baby sooner than we come home, you can. But if you don't want to go to the hospital, you don't have to go to the hospital. And so it's a beautiful picture of like how the baby's actually growing. And it gives so many openings for conversations, which has been so useful.
I can see that being helpful also with just like imagining how far along and like where in the timeline of the process you are, because we talk a lot about at the age that our kids are, Otto has a lot of hard time understanding like how far away is Halloween, you know, like how far away are these things? So that seems useful. That's good.
It's been really useful and it's just so sweet and beautiful. The other one I love is called When Aiden Became a Brother. And I picked this up at the store. I like kind of flipped through it. I liked it. I brought it home. And then when I read it, I realized, so it starts talking about Aiden, the sibling, and he's trans. So it talks about when he was born, people didn't understand his gender. And so there's like 3 or 4 pages about that. And then his mom tells him that she's pregnant. And it tells the story of him helping get ready and his anxiety about them not getting it right for the baby. And at the end of the book, he and his mom have a really sweet conversation where he's like covering the baby's ears. He's like trying to protect the baby and her belly from hearing things. And he said, like, what if we don't get it right? What if I've picked the wrong things? What if our new baby feels bad the way that I felt bad? And she's like, that is possible. But like you told us, and then we pivoted. And the only thing we can do is listen to our baby. And oh, it just makes me so teary. It's been a beautiful book for us to talk about gender, which Charlie is like really interested in, has a lot of questions about right now. And just like knowing that like there's infinite possibilities of ways that our baby might come into the world and that all we have to do is just like love whatever version of them we get, which feels like it extends beyond gender and just being like, we will listen and we will pivot and we might get it wrong and then we'll try again. And oh my God, this book just like makes me weep.
Oof. But like as a parent too, like not just the new sibling, but like
it's good on so many levels. We've had the conversations that have come out of reading this story are just, yeah, I recommend this for anyone. Like you don't need to be having a baby to have this book. It's so good. And then I think in it, woven into it, are some really beautiful scripts about loving and caring for someone who's trans.
Well, and just even that script of all we can do is listen. Like we might not get, like, I'm just thinking of that in so many relationships as a reminder, like we might get it wrong. All we can do is listen. We can always pivot.
Always pivot. Yeah. So that is just, yeah. Such a fucking gift. And then the last book is our fan favorite. We've talked about it. What Makes a Baby? So good. Charlie asks me all the time if the baby's going to come out through my vagina or through a hole in my belly. And it has been so useful because he has had a lot of questions about where babies come from, how are they made? And this book is like the ultimate script, in my opinion, for this conversation. So that's how it felt really helpful in talking very honestly, very directly about what is happening without, God, it's just so good at not giving you too much information and sticking to what is honest and true and not muddling it with like adults, like panic about talking about babies.
And then you also have an app. What's the app that you?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I downloaded this impulsively and I don't know that I wouldn't really, it's fine. It's a fine app. It tells you what size your baby is, like all the things. At the sizes, there's nothing remarkable about that. But what it does have is this three-dimensional simulation of what the baby looks like in utero. But you can like toggle through all of the weeks, and it's been really helpful.
Is that how far along you are, that picture?
That's how far along I am. Oh my God, Rebecca, my next scan is my 33 week. There's like a fully formed human inside of me.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
But here I'm like going back, like then he could look at it when it was like a little alien. So this app I just think is really helpful for kids to visualize what's going on, because it's so hard to see what, or to like conceptualize what's happening inside of my body or what it looks like.
What's the app called?
It's called Pregnancy Plus. I think it's connected to Baby List in some way. And then the last things that I have been doing that I hope are really helping is talking lots about my pregnancy with him, especially as it relates to, God, my body just keeps growing and Charlie's body keeps growing. He doesn't always know where his body is in space. And then my body, where my space is, shifts. And so, oh my God, the amount of times I'm just like, my dude, you cannot kick me in the stomach, or like, he's just too rough. And some of it is he's like being silly and rough. And some of it is like, both of our bodies are shifting at the same time. And it is so hard for both of us, but particularly him, to calculate space. And so there's been so many times where I have to just, I can't roughhouse with you in the way that I did before. The things you did before, the ways we would play before that didn't cause me harm would cause me harm now because there's a baby in my belly. And I try really hard. I want to like give it more context than just the baby. And so I talk a lot about how I cared for myself when I was pregnant with him. We look at pictures and I show him and talk to him about how I cared for him when he was a baby. And my hope is that that translates into when he sees me doing those things for our baby, that maybe some of it could feel like warmth, like, oh, I know I got that too. Or that there's like less jealousy. I don't know. That is what I've been doing, is just being like talking to him a lot about how I did all of this with him. And I hope that makes a difference.
Well, hey, all you can do is your best, and you might get it wrong, and you're going to listen and pivot if you need to.
Listen and pivot.
I mean, it sounds good to me. Sounds like a good plan. Who even knows who this baby's going to be? What's this baby going to be like?
Literally no idea.
Oh, wow.
It's absurd. It could be a good exercise to think of someone in your life that you've had, like there's a longevity to your relationship, or there's been a lot of evolution and change, and taking a moment to consider who they are right now. Like, what would it be like to meet them right now, to look at them through a fresh lens, and get to know them in this moment?
And maybe there's something useful about even paying attention to the story you have in your head about what they are. Like, I think sometimes we don't even realize we have that. The story I have in my head about who you are is blank.
First acknowledging that, yes.
And then what would it be like to be curious and open?
Yeah, like, is that story still true? What has changed? Where did that story come from? How does carrying this story impact my relationship with this person?
I wonder also, because I'm thinking a lot after this conversation about the ways that stories we hold inside of us, maybe even stories we aren't aware exist, can shape how we interact or how we respond to someone. And so what would it be like to interact with someone as if a different story was true, and seeing what happens as an experiment?
And if you're having a new tiny person and you have other people in your life, go get these books. We'll have them linked in our bookshop. And when you order them from there, you're supporting local small businesses, small bookstores, and we get a tiny kickback.
That's right. All right.
We love you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.